So pack your bags and get ready. Hitting the road with the best of friends, and you know that you're gonna rock steady. Ain't gotta listen to your teacher when you're getting wasted by the beach again. You got Ballyhoo pumping in your stereo. This is a summer jam, so here we go. Say, jump out of line, start to unwind. Jump, jump. Before you gotta get back to the grind, and don't waste a minute of your summertime.
Yeah, what? Sorry. I should have faded that out. That was terrible. I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. I asked you a question like midway, five seconds left. Anyway,
so sorry.
Good way to start Stroll's show proper.
Super cold, super cold, hard open right there.
Yeah, that was really, really bad. Yeah. But anyway, hey, we're back. Hour two of our Stroll Avaganza.
That's right. We had the pre-show, but minutes ago.
Minutes ago, and still sitting here. Is me, the C, over there.
Is the flow. I've decided to stand up for this one because...
He's having a little stomach issue.
Yeah, I'm burping a little bit, so I figure I just, stand up, let the gases work their way out, which way. Yeah, they can pick and choose which way they want to come out.
Steve's working through something while we're working
on
something.
Ah, yes.
You like that?
I like that. I do like that. So, yeah, we're here. We just heard us talk some wrestling and with our boy Brian. Brian, thank you so much, Brian.
And thank you, Big Brian Flick, for indulging.
Yes, I did not know a lot of that, but it was interesting to listen to.
Right. But you knew enough to, you commented.
I said something about Shaq.
Which is always good. You were involved. I still think, I didn't say this because I didn't know if Brian would know about the Shaq Fu, but he probably does. I thought that it would be a perfect opportunity if Shaq was to come into the Royal Rumble wearing like a Shaq Fu shirt. Or dressed as Shaq Fu.
You know, that would be a dream of mine.
I'm just saying, that would be a perfect time to debut the opportunity, for people to get the new game, which everybody is saying has been coming out for the last five years.
I don't know. I can actually look it up right now and see what headway has been made on that, because Shaq made the announcement and did
they did a Kickstarter. Yeah, they did really well.
Not that Shaq needs that money. You know Shaq has the money.
That's what I'm saying. That's what when it came out, I was kind of shocked to hear that he did a Kickstarter, because if Shaq wanted to make the game, right? All he has to do is go like under his mattress, shake out the sheets a little bit, and he'd probably find a couple million dollars to go fund this game. Like, how much does it cost to make a shitty video game these days? I don't think that much.
I don't think so either. And Shaq's bed is really big, so there's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of sheets. It's a lot of sheets. Like, what kind of bed do you think Shaq sleeps in? Is it like, what's bigger than a king?
Maybe he puts two king sizes to bed, like a sultan or something.
Like long ways?
I feel like he probably need two kings side by side, and then like maybe like four kings.
That's what I was just gonna say. Maybe it's four kings. Maybe he's got like he's got four of a kind.
Oh my goodness! I don't even want to know, because it probably has to be custom made, because I know Shaq probably has like custom doors made for him, because there's no like 7 foot.
He's got custom everything: custom shoes, custom clothes,
custom cars. Because how can he fit? Yeah. How can he fit? And I'm looking up. I just looked up Shaq Fu 2, and the most current article on it was like from 2015. So I don't know.
All right, maybe production got halted.
Maybe it did. Maybe there was some unexpected payments that had to be made that they couldn't be made to get the graphics just as good as Shaq wanted them to be.
Well, be that as it may, today we have musical guests on. Well, they're not playing music, but they are musicians.
They are musicians.
Musical guests. It's Prawn from New Jersey.
Yeah,
indie band. They just recently opened up for Jimmy Eat World.
That's right. You guys may know them from The Middle. Sweetness.
How do you say Jimmy Eat World? Do you say Jimmy Eat World or Jimmy Eat World or Jimmy Eat World?
I just go Jimmy Eat World.
Jimmy Eat World.
Yeah, like it's kind of
so the emphasis on world.
Jimmy Eat World. Well, that W is strong, so I feel like you gotta respect that.
Well, because I said it last night. I was telling somebody who like they opened for, and I said Jimmy Eat World, and it like
that seems unnatural though.
Yeah, but my girlfriend was like, "Why did you say it, Jimmy? Like, why'd you put the emphasis on the eat?" And like, you know, she never misses an opportunity to bust my balls about anything. So it doesn't matter. Like I could be like eating a piece of like prosciutto, sitting down. Mm. Oh, I could tell you about where I had my dinner last night. Yeah. I didn't tell you exactly what it was because my little brother's dinner was last night for his birthday.
Happy birthday,
deal. We went to this place called Bamante's.
Oh, where's that? Where in Brooklyn is that?
This is apparently in Williamsburg. But dude,
ooh.
This
OG.
Yeah,
good.
I think not only was the restaurant from the 70s, the wait staff was from the 70s too.
That's how you know it's authentic.
We got this guy that we named him like three different names, like Giacomo Alfredo Luciano. That's what we named him. This guy had to be at least 77 years old.
He was waiting tables.
Wow. And he was so nice. He smiled at you with all of his teeth missing. Mm. And I mean, you know, they don't got good insurance and they're working at Bamante's. Bamante's.
How was the bread? How was the bread? How was that bread? And when you got set down the table,
bread was great. I gotta be honest.
Butter.
Ba 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 ran. Do it. Ba ba ba.
Ba ba ran.
Very nice. Very nice.
Just like the Beach Boys.
Amazing food. Not gonna lie. A little expensive, but you're paying for the experience. You're paying for that. You know, you're sitting there and you're engulfed in this. Like, you're not even thinking about how long it is taking fucking Giacomo Alfredo Luciano to bring you your just to take your drink order. He's taking so, like, we're just sitting, my dad's like, and my dad's, you know, my dad is, he's not fucking around. When he's at a restaurant, if you're not on it, on point, it's like, it's almost like it's a road rage in a dining setting. Like that, we're here to eat. We're not here to, it's fine. Like, okay, he's taking a long time, but you're paying for this experience.
Exactly.
You're not gonna just like hit it and quit it. Yeah. Exactly.
So but that would be a tough yelper.
He's like holding himself onto the chair. Like he's like,
"What the fuck is this guy?
Where's this guy? Who's he?" And he's looking around. Like, and but you know, Giacomo Alfredo is in the he's in the back plating food because it's so busy. Every table was packed.
I feel like he probably doubles as like he's probably like stirring the spaghetti or something. He's like, he's got to do a couple things. He's tasting the sauce.
Dude, he was doing it all, this man. And to be honest, we had to give him a big tip, and it says that the wait staff would prefer if we give tip in cash. And we're like, because he probably just puts it right in his fucking pocket.
Of course. He doesn't want to have to wait for that to clear through the credit card company.
You know how like usually like you leave the tip on the table and they'll come back and get it? Yeah. We had the tip ready, and he just knew that the tip was there, and he's like, "Oh, thank you. Grazie mille." And he he pulls up, puts it right in his lapel in his pocket.
He's got to eat later.
Dude, we put like a $60 tip. That was an expensive meal.
Yeah, what do you think Giacomo was going to do? He's just going to go eat and go buy something nice for his girl. You know he probably has a girlfriend.
Right.
He's got one of those gumads on the side.
I mean, no, dude, I don't know. This guy could have had three wives that have lived and died. This guy was old.
Yeah. Did he dye his hair black? I feel like he
no.
Like, no.
He had gray hair with
gray
like
out.
Four hairs that he was combing over.
Ooh, he was trying that.
He wasn't trying it.
He was doing it. Would you try that?
Well, what are you saying? Do I think I need to?
No, I'm not saying you need to right now, but I'm saying when you're 70 years old, would you like Homer Simpson that?
I think eventually what I'm going to do, because, you know.
I'm curious to know what my friend's going to look like in 5 years.
Anybody who listens to the show, you probably know, you've heard me say, and most of these people that I know, that I'm talking to, know that I'm going bald, right? It's been happening.
Tastefully, though. Tastefully.
Yeah, I guess. Whatever. As tastefully as one can go, as gracefully as one could ease into middle age, that's what I'm doing, I guess. So eventually, you know, I'm going to have so few hairs on my head. And I do feel like it is slowed down exponentially. Like there was a point where I would wash my hair and my hands would be full with my own hair.
So what is that like? I feel like I would panic. I'd be very nervous.
Well, I didn't panic because I kind of saw it coming because my dad's bald. His dad was bald. My cousin Ev, who's in the band with me, he went bald. You know, so it's just like, I know kind of it was coming. There's like a wives' tale that says, oh, it goes based on your mom's side.
Mom's father or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But that's a why that doesn't mean anything. Because my grandpa on my mom's side, he died with a full head of hair.
Wow.
So, but they, you know, they go gray really.
Maybe
early.
It's like every other, I don't generation. I don't know how that works, to be honest. You what are you gonna do? You're alive. You're healthy, relatively.
relatively.
And you're gonna watch the Rumble tonight. So that I think
that's true.
That's all you really need.
Good way to bring that around. We're gonna be playing some board games tonight. We're playing a lot of games this week. A little Pokemon. We're doing a little board game action. We're excited. We're excited to have Prawn on the show.
Yeah.
Let's get into one of their songs. Yeah. How about that, Steve?
You want to do something off their most current album, Kingfisher?
Sure, let's do that. Let me pull that up.
Pull that up.
Should I do the deluxe or should I do the regular?
I would say do regular. Do okay. regular.
Well,
I don't know.
I will listen to you.
Because the deluxe is just like a lot of like B-sides or like reimaginations of like songs that are on the album.
That may be. Or it's just extra songs. I don't know how they do it these days.
I don't know.
But it's pretty cool to have a deluxe. That's pretty legit.
That's how you know. When you get deluxe, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, for real. We're excited to talk to these guys. The leading track on this album is, I think, their most popular track anyway, so we might as well just play that.
Yeah,
it's called Scud Running. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. It's the Stroll Show with Seeing the Flow. We'll be back after this with members of
Prawn.
Prawn. So let's get it.
Got a call right in right now. We got Prawn on the phone. Hello, guys. You're
hey,
on the Stroll.
How you doing?
Good. Is this Tony?
Yep.
Hey, Tony. It's Steve and Paul from the Stroll Show. How you doing?
Hey, man. How you doing? Thanks for calling us.
Good. Yeah, no problem. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty good over here.
Doing pretty good. Yeah, we're doing an extra long show today, so we're extra ready for you now. Like we've been prepping up, so we're ready to go.
Awesome.
Cool. So how you doing on this Sunday?
Good. A little tired. I think I had a late night last night. Went to the American football show in New York.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What were they playing yesterday?
But they played Terminal 5.
Nice. I feel like that was sold out, right?
Yeah, I think it sold out at the end, yeah. It was great.
Those guys. I feel like those guys made a comeback after, because they haven't released an album, what, like 10 years or something? Or even
I think they just released their second LP a couple months ago. But before that, they hadn't done anything.
Yeah, because they had kind of like this like weird, like... kind of gained a lot of momentum, and then all of a sudden they kind of came back into our lives.
Yeah, no, now they're selling 3,000 capacity venues.
That's unbelievable.
That's the move, right? Like you get a little seed planted, and then you kind of like let go away and let the seed kind of grow into a little beautiful plant, and then eventually you just make another album, and then people are like, "Oh man, that plant is beautiful now. Let's go see it."
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're legends, but yeah, some bands can do it like that.
Right. So let's talk about your band. Let's talk about Prawn. What's going on for you, with you guys right now? Are you planning some tours coming up in the summer, or what's kind of percolating right now for you guys?
Well, right now we're just finishing up writing a new record, and we'll be in the studio early March. So hopefully a new record out by late summer, early fall, and then probably start touring again in the late spring. But we have no solidified plans right now other than recording this new record.
That's pretty nice, though, because you guys have some time to, like, really, you know, get the creative juices flowing. You don't have to really, you know, worry about, like, what's on the horizon, like, what, you know, got the show coming up, what are we going to do for these shows? Right now, you can just focus on the writing and the recording and really put out, like, a really good product.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've been writing records for the last 2 years, but tours keep popping up that we can't say no to. So, you know, we would have liked to have this record done by now, but it's just kind of how it goes. So, yeah, everything's good. We're excited for the new record.
Yeah, putting out a record too is a big undertaking. Even if you have help from a record label, you know, you have to, especially in today's day and age, like where, you know, social media is so important. I feel like I talk to a lot of every band about this but it's so prevalent. I mean, do you feel like it's different now promoting an album? I mean, obviously it's different, but you know, like, I don't know, how is it for a band these days trying to like put out a record? Like, what is like, you think the most important thing you're trying to what are the most important steps in like trying to make it like a successful release, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think number one is writing a good record.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And, you know, having a good recording process and being happy with the final product. And then other than that, we've always worked with Top Shelf Records, and they're incredible. They've always helped us out promoting it, marketing it. They have their own marketing team, and really on our end, you know, we'll try to do as much social media as we can, but to be honest, we don't have the biggest presence on social media as a band.
It's tough.
Yeah, so for us, it's usually just hitting the road and touring is the best way to promote it for us.
That's true. And you guys just recently, I saw you guys recently played in December with Jimmy Eat World, which is, you know, bananas if you think about it. That's really awesome.
Yeah, that was wild. That was just kind of a fluke thing that occurred. We were on our way down to the fest in Florida, and our friend Tom Mullen, who does Washed Up Emo.
Oh, yeah, the podcast.
Yeah, so Jimmy World, I guess, contacted him and asked if what we were doing and if we wanted to join them on the shows, and Tom got in contact with us, and obviously we said, yeah, we'd love to do it, so it was kind of a, you know, last minute. We knew 6 weeks before, and we were like, of course we're going to play with Jimmy Eat World.
How could you say no to that?
Yeah, exactly.
So how were the guys?
No way in hell we were saying no.
So how were the guys in the band? Were they cool with you?
They were awesome. They were super refreshing. I mean, these guys are obviously extremely professional and have been doing this most of their life, and sometimes you meet, you know, people even that have been doing it for 5 years in a more professional way that are a little jaded and, you know, kind of take it more as a business. But, I mean, I had a conversation with the bassist of Jimmy World, and it was so refreshing to hear you say, you know, like, I was asking him how his day was going. He's like, it's a great day. It's another day I got to play music, and, you know, been doing this for 20 years. And they're not jaded at all. They still absolutely love playing music, enjoying it. They love their fans, and they're doing it for all the right reasons. So to see a band like that, that has had so much commercial success, still just do it for enjoying playing music is pretty special.
It's true. I think they're a really good example of a band that really worked. Obviously, like they worked hard. Like they didn't have immediate success, right? Like, and even with when The Middle came out, I think it. Mm-hmm. I think it was obviously a big hit, but like, I think it took a while for it to become a hit. Like, I don't think it was like, I remember when MTV was a thing, like to watch, like, get information on music. I remember they were saying that it took almost a full year for it to sell a certain amount of copies to that it went platinum or something. So over a period of time, however the radio used to work, because radio doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. But like a song would break, and then whether it would go or not go would be based on if, you know, it resonated with resonated with the public or something. But they had albums out before that, and like, I mean, and then they reached the highest of highs, and then they were playing with, you know, I mean, we saw them when we were in like high school, and we saw them play like, what was that, the Nassau Coliseum or something?
Yeah, I forget what it was. But they Taking Back Sunday opened for them, so they were kind of like, I guess they weren't really, because they were more of like a traditional emo band, like more not really mm-hmm. like that kind of like Taking Back Sunday style
emo record.
You know, so it was an unusual show, but they weren't playing like with bigger bands. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't know who
they
big,
were the
like,
big band.
Yeah, like were like the Strokes. I guess they would play with at that time. I don't know. So they were kind of like just kind of like freestanding at that
point. Well, if you guys get a chance, Jim Atkins did a podcast. I can't remember with who, but it's like an hour and a half, and he talks about them getting their start. And I mean, they've been playing together since the end of high school for them. So they've been at it forever, and you know, they've definitely just built up. And it seems like they got a couple lucky breaks along the way, but I think most of it, like you guys were saying, it's just hard work and perseverance for them.
Yeah. So I mean, and for Prawn, what was like the impetus for you guys to get together? Was it similar? I assume it was like founded on similar ideals, right?
Yeah.
You want to put out a good product and.
Yeah, the drummer and I went to high school together, and our old guitarist, the three of us started the band, and then I worked with Kyle, who's our now guitarist, and then we all went to college and kept kind of playing when we were in college, just the local gigs and a fun thing, and then we did our first LP when we were in college, and Ships, which was our second EP that we did. And then we all graduated college and kind of didn't want to go into the real world and get jobs and still really wanted to play music. So we kind of just took this thing and full time and have just had odd jobs since and just trying to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
but
it's
yeah, we've known each other forever now. Well, I mean, we're like brothers. We're all best friends and, you know.
I'm sure that helps a lot. And, I mean, you know, it could probably be a double-edged sword sometimes when you're trying to make certain decisions. But like, I assume I'm in a band with my cousin. And it's just mm-hmm. me and him. So, like, that just having, like, a friend or, like, a family member or something like that, that bond that you have really helps you stay together, which a lot of bands, and I think that's one of the hardest things today is to stay together, to have a band that has longevity. And I think longevity means a lot right now in this age of, you know, technology where everything is just so fleeting. You know, bands come and go or whatever. But if you stay around long enough, you know, you can, whatever success is, I think you could find it now, you know, if you're good enough and you're a good person, you know, and which there's, you know, not necessarily a lot of good people in the music business, right? But, you know, so all right, for you guys, like, what is it like touring? Like, how do you go over in like other parts of the country?
Touring is probably, other than writing, I mean, there's not many parts of music for us, but other than writing the record and recording the record, touring is usually my favorite part. We've toured for so long now that, like, in, like, smaller venues that we know a lot of our, like, I don't even call them fans, but just mainly friends that will come out, you know, all over the country. And, yeah, touring incredible. We toured Europe 3 times, which was pretty awesome. I mean, obviously you get into little quarrels and band fights on tour, but we've never had too serious of blow-ups.
You eat my schnitzel? Did you eat my schnitzel? Something like that. sorry.
Yeah. No, it's all right.
But I feel like it happens because when you're on tour, like you're kind of together, either in a van or on a plane or just at venues waiting early, getting there before everybody else, sitting in the back. You know, you just sometimes, you know, like let's say some of the band is chewing like chips too loud, like in Turtles 2,
that's,
right?
That's where the band fights happen.
Exactly.
And you don't have any personal space. You're with the same people for so long. Yeah, you know, it's hard to get away from someone in a personal space.
Yeah, sometimes you'll try and beat one.
That's the only contentious issue.
And your ass starts to hurt because you're sitting for so long.
That's true.
I've definitely been
and
there.
And the other thing is deciding when you have to stop to go to the bathroom.
Oh, that's tough.
We have one of our bassists has to pee every half an hour, so that gets a little tiresome. But
gotta bring those Snapple bottles. Like the wide mouth.
Yeah, definitely.
I gotta be honest though. The thing that in Europe, at least where I've been in Europe, and been on and toured like Austria and Germany, they don't have a lot of wide mouth bottles to pee in. It's like very, very skinny skinny holes. I'm just saying.
Eco-friendly, yeah.
more for the environment than like, I'm not giving myself any compliments, but it just can't happen.
I'm actually curious because when I've been to Europe and playing gigs and stuff, I'm lucky that I know somebody that drives and like has a station wagon, and I'm only in a 2-man band, so it's very easy for us to get around. What is it like for you guys? Would you have multiple people, and like do you like rent a van and rent the gear, or do you your label help set you up? How does that work?
We've been over 3 times, and they've all been different situations. So the first time we went over with this band called Ape Up in 2012. And at that point, we had a booking agent set everything up. So we had a driver, we had a rental van and rental equipment, and then they were a 3-piece band. So there was 8 people in the van traveling, the 4 of us, the driver, and them. And that went smoothly. That was super fun. We had all just graduated university, college in 2012. So that was like a huge, just fun party time. And then the second time we went over, we were supporting this band called Narwhals, and they let us borrow all their equipment. It was kind of a last-minute offer, so they let us borrow all their equipment, and then we just rented a van, and Jamie, the drummer, and I just drove us the whole time in Europe, which was interesting. And then the last time we went over with an acoustic act called Brighter and a band called Hindsights, and we borrowed all of Hindsight's equipment and just rented a van, and I drove along with the guy in Brighter.
Now, did you drive stick?
So, yep.
Holy shit.
I've driven stick my whole life, but Jamie actually, before the Narwhals tour, learned stick the week before.
Oh, my God. And
that's a valuable asset to have. Because I can't drive stick.
Yeah.
Especially over there, because, I mean, I've looked into vans over there touring as well, and I remember I was touring with a band, and only one person knew how to drive stick over there, and so he was doing all the driving. So my cousin, he's a kind man, he's a smart man, he's a great man. He thought he was going to be able to learn how to drive stick in one day on the roads of like Austria,
yeah.
And these are not easy roads. A lot of them are cobblestone. A lot of them are uphill. It's kind of crazy roads. You're not gonna learn, and so
yeah, I know.
He literally, after 5 minutes, our another band person who was with us that could drive stick was like, "Dude, it's not gonna work. Stop." No, but that's really impressive, yeah. Man. That's not easy to do. I mean, it's easy for you if you've been doing it your whole life. But what kind of car did you have that you learned to drive stick on? I'm curious.
I had an old like '91 Volvo like G240, something like that.
Okay. I thought those old Volvos are like tanks.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it was a good car.
No, that's really cool. So, what is it like driving around in another country? Like the first time you did that, was that crazy?
Well, the first time we did it, we were so hungover most of the time that we just slept in the van. But that was actually one of the nice things about driving around the last 2 times, is because when you're actually driving, you have to obviously be awake and aware. So, normally if you're not driving, I'm just asleep in the van because obviously touring, you don't get a lot of sleep. It's just gorgeous. Like driving through the Alps is something that's just crazy. I mean, because you just see, because it's all flat around there, and then you kind of just see them coming up, like in Switzerland and Italy.
Looks like Bob Ross paintings all around you.
It really is, yeah. I love driving in Europe. I don't like driving. It's a lot better than driving in the States. The States kind of are just these highways that are just flat and you don't really see much, but there's always something to see in Europe.
I know, there's another Costco.
Prettier roads over there.
That's true. I mean, guys in Jersey, so we know. I mean, we're in Brooklyn, so we know, you get through Jersey, you're just kind of trying to push through. Get down to I-95.
Exactly. Speaking of Jersey, as good, I was going to bring that up, actually. So you guys, you formed and I'm sure cut your teeth a lot in the New Jersey music scene. So I guess talk a little bit about that. Like, what was that like when you guys were first starting? Has it changed a lot since then?
I don't know. Kind of a weird question if it's changed a lot. Yes, because I mean when we were like in high school before like Prawn was in came about, I was playing with other bands that kind of went the more indie route, so our open mics, like Titus Andronicus was playing them, the guys and members of Real Estate were playing them. So like we had like a big burgeoning indie rock scene. They were all a bit older than us. And then the other side, and those were like just playing in like basements. And I mean, our one friend Cameron, who's played in 1,000 bands, but he's playing in Porches right now. His dad had like a yoga studio in Mahwah, so like he would have some shows in the yoga studio. And I remember it was one of like Real Estate's first shows, or like right when they were starting to kind of gain steam.
Oh, wow.
And there
yeah.
was like 200 people crammed into this yoga studio to see it, which was pretty cool. So there was like that side of the scene, which was kind of like a little, we weren't really involved too much in it. And then there was like the VFW pop punk kind of scene, which we weren't really involved with. We kind of didn't fit in anything.
Hello? Did we lose him?
I think we lost him. Oh, no.
You there?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
yeah.
Sorry,
oh,
man.
We go.
I don't know what happened.
Sorry.
Hey, no problem, no problem. Yeah, you were saying about you didn't really fit into any specific scene or whatever.
Yeah, so we just played as many shows as we could possibly get. Yeah, I mean, New Jersey's always been kind of a hotbed for music, so, yeah. I mean, we still played some basements the last few years. We just played some Montclair called the Bat Cave.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I love New Jersey. It's a great place for music, and I mean, like, tons of good bands come out of here. I mean, getting all types of attention, which well-deserved. But, I mean, they've been playing New Jersey for the last 6 years almost.
Wow. Are you familiar at all with the Tiny Giant Artists Collective that used to exist a couple of years ago? Had you hear that in your travels in New Jersey?
I have not. What's that?
That's a, I don't know. It was a very some similar bands, like similar like indie bands that didn't really fit into a lot of different
like pop punk molds,
different
and things
molds.
Like that.
Yeah, like the Nico Blues were in there.
Our Front Bottoms were there too.
Bottoms were in there originally before the Front Bottoms like got big. I guess I don't know. Front Bottoms are interesting because I don't know if I call them like, I guess they were an indie band when they started, but they kind of fit in more of a pop punk realm, but they kind of fit into a lot of different
like
things,
poppy,
which is
I
think
guess.
Why they got so successful. I don't know.
Yeah, they're a crazy success story. They're like massive rock stars.
it's true.
I don't
man.
Know what genre I would call them, but yeah, they're amazing. I mean, yeah, nuts to see how big they've gotten.
Yeah, so quickly, like traction just you know, word of mouth really spreads fast.
Yeah, did you see them like all when they were coming up in that music scene over there?
See, it was funny. We were just hanging. They came to the Jimmy Eat World show in Asbury. We were chatting to them, and we're the same age and grew up like in the same punk communities in New Jersey. But we never crossed paths coming up until like 2014. We played a show together, but that was when they were already a huge band. But yeah, we somehow just never crossed paths when we were kind of getting our starts, which is really odd because there's not that many bands in New Jersey.
Yeah, and there's only like I guess a certain areas of Jersey that to play, right? Like I mean, you know, you have the Montclair area, which I mean, I think I've heard of the Bat Cave. Did that used to be something else? Did that used to be like the Meat Locker, or does the Meat Locker still exist over there?
The Meat Locker still exists, as far as I know.
could have changed. It could have changed, but
sometimes too.
Right, right. There's also yeah. like New Brunswick area, obviously, and like
yep.
You know, Jersey City and stuff like that, like wherever the Maxwell's was. But I don't even
Hoboken,
know if Maxwell's.
Yeah,
Hoboken.
Yeah, Maxwell's is still probably my favorite venue.
Yeah, I think it reopened, right? Because it closed and reopened again. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I heard it's like a not doesn't like really do shows anymore or something. No. But I mean, the old Maxwell's, that was like our favorite place to play. We played there a handful of times.
It's a shame. It's a shame they can't keep these venues open, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when there's like so limited places to play like that are really good in a certain area. Like, I mean, now Brooklyn is kind of similar in the fact that like there's not many like I would say there's a lot of venues. Obviously, there's so many places to play, but that's almost to a detriment because there's so much going on that you don't really you just feel lost in the shuffle. Like I'm playing a show at Pianos and it's just like, oh, it's just a show at Pianos. Like, but I remember when I first started, I was like, oh man, I'm playing Pianos thinking it was like a big deal. I'm playing on the Lower East Side, but the Lower East Side now is just so overblown and there's not like seems like there's not a lot of like real music fans, like people that want to see a band go for it. Like you just want to see somebody press a button and like let a track play. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's talented people too that do that, but I mean, like for the most part, there's a lot of oversaturation in whatever the New York City scene is anymore. I don't really think there There is a word. I don't know if I like that word "scene" anymore. I keep saying
change it.
I don't know. I got to change it. I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah, I got to figure out a better word than "scene."
I can't think of one. I'll have to go in my laboratory and start figuring it out.
I mean, New York's just always been so oversaturated. It's such a interesting market because it's a huge market. But I mean, if you're like a local band kind of getting a start, I think it's really the foothold in New York City. I mean, we never really were able to get a foothold in New York City. We just started touring. And then once you started touring, you know, then it kind of developed. But, I mean, yeah, New York City, it's always just, like, friends and family that will come out, I feel like.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
For bands that are just starting up.
So what was your favorite place? What's your favorite place to play in, let's say, this country, in the United States? What was, like, your favorite, like venue location?
I would have to say the Sinclair up in Boston.
Ooh, okay. Have we been there before?
We played there 3 times. It's just the staff is absolutely incredible. It's a gorgeous venue. Food's amazing. The sound system's awesome. It's right in Harvard Square. That's probably my favorite venue.
Awesome.
Is there any place in the country that when you went there for the first time, or like you've gone back to a few times, that you find you were kind of surprised that how well you were received, like you didn't expect it to go well, but it like went over really well?
Yeah, there's definitely been a handful of those. I'm trying to pinpoint one. I love playing Florida. Florida, we have a really good time then usually, especially like Tampa and Orlando.
That's awesome, yeah.
I really like Austin. Texas is great. Well, we've always had good shows in Seattle. Seattle's tough to tour up to.
Yeah, because what's around there, really? It's like Seattle, and then you're not really playing Oregon or anything like that, right?
We've played Portland a couple times, which has been great. I mean, I just really like the Pacific Northwest, but Seattle, we've, like, our first show there was, like, packed, and we were, like, never been up there, and so we were pretty blown away, and we were headlining, too, so it was just kind of crazy.
That's awesome, man. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, that was really cool. So... I'd say those. Yeah, there's a couple. I just can't think of them right now.
That's cool. And you mentioned Florida, and also you mentioned playing the fest earlier. I don't know, Steve. Did you have a question about the fest? Okay, so yeah, so like basically, have you played there before, or how many times have you played the fest, or what's that like down there? We really want to get out. We haven't been out there yet, so yeah. Kind of really interested to go check it out. The Florida scene, you know, like the scene of Florida, that scene that happens.
The fest scene.
Yeah, fest is like my favorite music festival to play. We played there 4 times now.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it gets better every year. I mean, not really like the Florida scene. It's like all the bands are, you know, from all over the world, and all of the people going seeing the festival are from all over the country and world. And it's just like, you know, Gainesville's a small city, so the whole downtown just shuts down for fest weekend. And there's like, you know, 20, 30 venues, music from, you know, noon till 3 o'clock in the morning. It's so well run, and, you know, it's just such a good time.
And I heard that there's a very interesting man that runs that place. I mean, we had a band in here that recently played there as well. Was it High School Football Heroes that we had that mentioned it? Or maybe it was...
Up for Nothing.
Oh, Up for Nothing. It, yeah. And they said that there's a very interesting guy that runs it, that like he'll come to Florida for like a couple of months to set up the fest, and then he goes
back to Hawaii or something.
Like, he goes and lives in Hawaii for the rest of the year, and then only comes back. He's like a eclipse or something. He only comes back when he's needed for the fest.
I didn't know that, but that's crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, we got to definitely get down there next year. It's just hard, you know. It's hard to for us to just go down to Florida. We're, you know, we're two working stiffs. You know? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you can, I would highly suggest it. I mean, we played a bunch of music festivals, and it's far and away my favorite to play.
That's cool. What are some other festivals?
I mean, you see all your friends that you only see touring, or, you know, maybe once or twice a year. They're all down at Fest, so it's a big reunion for bands and friends and fans. And yeah,
it's interesting. Great. A lot of people that have been in here that we've talked to, that they said the same exact thing.
It's like a big family reunion in Florida.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
So, you mentioned some other festivals. Is there any other festivals that, of note, that maybe that you have stories about or something?
Well, we played South by Southwest 2 or 3 times now.
Interesting, yeah.
And South by is great, but it's just like so many people. You're on your feet all day, and it's so a week long, and you're playing like two shows a day.
Wow.
It's just exhausting.
Isn't it like really spread out, though, too, South by Southwest?
It's spread out, and it's difficult to move downtown because everything's closed down because there's so many people and people walking around. So, I mean, it's a ton of fun. It's just exhausting. And I don't know. It's not our favorite just because it's like, it's a fun idea, and it's fun the first 2 days, but then you're just pooped. And,
so I'm trying to think, like something like that couldn't exist in the city. Like I'm just thinking, like closing down an area of the city to have like this.
They tried to do that with like CMJ, but like CMJ was not as big or as good as.
The same idea, though, right? It was like multiple venues playing multiple shows throughout like a week or something.
Like a week, yeah. But I mean, you know, it's not as cool because it's the city.
There's too many people. Right. That's the problem. There's too many people in the city. You can't get them out of the way.
We're saying it right now here on the Stroll. You heard the tourists. There's too many people in the damn city. We sound like old men.
We did. But you know what it is? Because we talked to a lot of bands, and they're from like smaller areas of the country, and it seems like it seems more fun, you know? Like they play shows. We had someone last week calling from Michigan, and they're from Lansing, and they said how like, you know, it's like a tight knit community.
Yeah, it's more of a community aspect to different.
You know, like I feel like here everyone's just trying to jump somebody to get someplace, and it's not the right way to go about it sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But
I can see that.
It sounds like you guys are going about it the right way, that's for sure. And we're kind of wrapping up here. I don't want to keep you too much longer. I know you enjoy your Sunday. And
all right.
Appreciate you taking the time out. Is there anything else coming up for you guys that you want to let us know about, let your fans know about?
I have no promotional things to say.
Okay.
That's awesome.
That's it.
That's good enough.
All right.
How about this?
Nice chatting to you guys.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, take care.
All right, take care, man.
All right. There you go.
Very awesome.
Push my
Prawn, mic. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Tony, for being on. And I was going to ask him. I totally forgot. I was going to ask him what song maybe he wanted us to play next, but I will leave that to my own decision.
Yeah, you have the power.
I will play. I actually like the title of this song. It's called... First as tragedy, second as farce.
Yeah, I was listening to that the other day. It was really good.
It's a good song. It's also off their most recent release. And we'll be back after this to kind of have some closing notes. You're listening to The Stroll Show with C and The Flow, Radio Free Brooklyn.
I'm a stranger to these troubles.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Stroll Show here in Radio Free Brooklyn. We're winding down the last of this 2 hours. Just had Tony from Prawn Talk call in. Called. Super awesome dude. Thank you for calling in. You know, we started this thing at 11 a.m. We were started off with a little wrestling, little wrestling thing. We were doing a little Royal Rumble, and, you know, we had Ryan Last call in. And then second hour, we had Prawn call in. So we had a lot of call-ins, and we thank everybody for that. So how you doing there, Paul?
Doing good, man. I have some oh shit moments of the week.
You have an oh shit moment. We actually have time to do the oh shit moment of the week.
I actually have two.
You have two?
I have two.
I know you wanted to save one from last time.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Yes.
And then you have another one?
Yes. I have two. So you don't even have to think of one. I got
it. Okay, good, good. I can oh shit off of that oh shit moment.
So, first, oh shit. Moment of the week is... I was watching Rocky III.
Okay. Okay. Was that just the ocean moment in and of itself?
No. It was when I first moved into my apartment, I realized it was on TV when my TV got first hooked up, and it was like a Rocky marathon. They were doing like a, it was basically like a bad movies we love kind of thing on IFC, right?
Okay.
So they had Rocky III on, and
one's that again? If I can,
that's the one with
Tommy Gunn.
No. That's Rocky V. Rocky III is it's a pretty big one. It's like a turning point in the franchise. That's the one. Spoiler alert: Mickey dies.
Oh yeah, Mickey.
And then Apollo Creed comes to try to train him to beat Clubber Lang.
Oh okay, yeah.
Mr.
Okay.
T. So my oh shit moment
so
occurred.
Awesome.
First of all, when I recorded it when I first moved in, and I was gonna watch it, but I couldn't justify sitting down on the couch and wasting 3 hours watching what should be an hour and 20 minute Rocky movie, but with all the commercials and everything spread out on IFC, you're sitting there for like over 2.5 hours watching Rocky. I cannot justify that. Plus, I had a lot of housework to do because I was just moving into my apartment.
Very true.
But ultimately, I was flipping through my DVR because I forgot this. But apparently, smart guy I am, knew that one day I would want to watch this. And I had an oh shit moment when I realized Rocky III was recorded on my DVR.
Oh, man.
And this is over the week when my girlfriend was away. So I had nothing to do but, you know, drink beer, play video games, eat potato chips, and apparently watch Rocky.
Rocky III, no less.
So I watched Rocky III. And so it wasn't just enough an oh shit moment that I realized that I had Rocky III, and I love Rocky III. I think it might be my favorite one. Hulk Hogan is in there. That's like Hulk Hogan made his name in that movie. That was before he was Hulk Hogan. Like, he was really nobody.
You think about Rocky. See, he's had some good adversaries, you know?
That's true. But that's the great story. You need a great adversary to have a great hero.
That's true. That's why new Rocky, even though it was good, the new one, Creed, was a good movie. It just didn't have that... that villain appeal.
They had like a Conor McGregor-ish kind of guy that was that. But I mean, it was all right.
That was just
a passing of the torch of Rocky to Creed. You know what I mean? I think. But anyway, my oh shit moment happened when I was watching it and I realized that Sylvester Stallone's face still had expression in it. He raised his eyebrows up and his forehead crinkled. If you look at any picture of Stallone now, if you watch The Expendables, if you watch anything of current Stallone, any of his like bullshit remakes that he keeps doing, you go watch Creed, watch anything. The man is supposed to be how old? Almost 70?
He's in his 70s, I think.
Right. He's an old man. He still looks good. He looks good for 70.
Yeah, God bless you, Sylvester.
His hair is a little questionable. I'd like to know who has to come in to construct the architecture on top of his head, because that's pretty impressive. That's like Trumpian. That's like a Trumpian coif that he's got going on. But when the man... emotes, which you're, you know, as an actor, you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to be able to emote and have an expressive face.
Right, because it's part of the scene.
Right, you're selling the drama, right? Yeah. Like
without
live.
Saying, we're having to say anything.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you watch him, his whole forehead moves up in one thing. it's like a big block of skin on his head.
You think that's the Botox?
I don't know what he's got going on, but it's more than Botox, I think.
A little facelift or something.
I was like, oh shit, fucking Sylvester Stallone, look at his furrowed brow. He's got a couple crinkles. He's got a couple of lines in that forehead. A couple of emotive lines. So I was like, oh shit.
That was definitely oh shit moment.
Right? Yeah. So that was the one I wanted to tell you last week. But I didn't know if that was good enough to be on air. But this one.
This is good?
This is the prelude. That was the prelude to now the main show. We're doing a lot of lubricating of ideas and pre-showing, pre-preying.
Yes. Things. Yeah, we're doing a lot of
pre-shows to shows.
Pre-shows and reconfirmings and all these things.
Yeah. I gave you the pre-oh shit to the real oh shit. Oh,
okay. This is the real deuce.
I don't remember what caused me to look this up, but it happened. I think I just stumbled upon it. I think we were talking about Will Smith. Like, as you know, usually we'll be talking about Will Smith at one point.
Either Will Smith or Taylor Swift. Yeah. One of the two. We always got him on our brain.
So I don't know why I went to look up what Will Smith is doing. And it led me to looking at the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air page.
Is it on Facebook or is it or just that is some other some Fresh
Prince? It was on IMDb.
Page. Oh, okay. IMDb. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't preface that. I just said the page could be.
I was very curious. I thought there was probably some Facebook page just dedicated to this, but continue.
Right. So, you know, we're children of the 90s, right?
Yes.
We grew up in the 90s. We became
conscious in the 90s.
I would say so. Now we're finally getting old enough to actually feel nostalgia. Right?
Yeah,
for like the
weird.
First time. It is weird, but you know, it's happening. That's why now there's like the whole 90s craze is coming back because they're pandering to the demographic that didn't exist before, which now exists because we are now old enough to be conscious of our nostalgia.
And we may have kids young enough to then watch that so they can make new fans out of old stuff.
Exactly. And just keep making more money off the same ideas.
That's genius.
That's
the greatest idea I've ever heard.
But anyway, so I was looking at the Fresh Prince IMDb page. And, you know, like I said, we're big fans of the 90s, big fans of Will Smith, right?
Love Will Smith.
I also was a big fan of this Tatiana Ali when I was growing up.
Ooh.
Because she was a very beautiful, attractive young woman. And I was a young man.
You're a very young man. Right? Yes.
Now, I went and I was, you know, I got to be honest, I was doing a little creeping on Tatiana Ali's IMDb page. And I come to find out that this woman is 38 years old.
Wow.
And I was like, oh shit.
That's old.
She's 38? That's not old, but I mean, it's old for Tatiana Ali, I think.
I was
genuinely shocked.
You're 10 years younger.
Right.
That's not that old.
No.
So how old was she in the 90s?
That's what I'm thinking. I was like, I mean, but it makes you think like the 90s was, when did Fresh Prince start? Like 94, 96, 95, one of those?
I would say like 93, 94.
You think
like
it was that early? So yeah.
I think so.
I mean, if she was like 14 when that started, that's like 25 years ago.
I know that. Wow. I remember watching like the first, well, I don't know if I watched the first airing of the first episode. But I remember sitting down at like 4 years old and watching Fresh Prince on Nickelodeon and being like, oh man, this is a cool show.
It's a cool show.
And
no show, I think, embodied the 90s more than that.
Because
Will Smith was like a fashion icon.
he was a fashion icon.
For the 90s.
Well, if you ever watched the show, I mean, he wore the most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
I know, and he made them all work. I like when he realized that he could wear his school jacket inside out, and it was like a weird print.
Yeah, but it still looked awesome. But it made no sense because he still had like a little lapel pocket on it. And I'm like, wait, they had a reversible lapel pocket just in case Will Smith came along? I can't believe that.
They made it a two-sided jacket just in case one day this man, maybe a prophecy would be fulfilled that a man named the Fresh Prince would bestow upon them I don't know.
That's true. It was crazy because, I mean, we've said it a couple times. I mean, we went to 90s Fest, and this last one had DJ Jazzy Jeff or Jazz from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and it was just weird seeing him at, like, what could he be now? He's got to be in his 40s like Will Smith, and it was just like, man, he used to be like this, like, thin Jazz, you know, like funny guy, and then you see him, he's just kind of like this middle-aged dad now, and I don't know if that's weird. I mean, I guess it's life, clearly.
No, it's clearly life, but it really sunk in, because not that I think about Tatiana Ali all the time.
Well, I don't know if you do or not.
But I mean, like, when I think about her, I still think, if I ever think of her, I still think, oh, maybe she's like, you know, early 30s, late 20s. Like, I don't think she's like...
You never think of her as being like...
Close to 40. You know what I mean? Like, not that... Whatever. 40's not that old, but that's not that young of a woman anymore. And so you just start... I think it made me go, oh shit. Not so much that I realized that she was getting older, but it made me realize my own mortality. That I'm getting older.
I like how Tatiana Ali was the one to make you realize it.
Yeah. So that... I don't know. Whatever. That's my oh shit moment of the...
That's very true, because you get old enough. We're approaching 30 now, folks. Let's not kid ourselves here.
It's okay. Right? It's fine.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because you can't stop aging. As long as we're still alive, then I think we're doing pretty good for ourselves.
Can't stop the ever progressing rolling tumble down towards the grave.
Yes, but you know, it's interesting to see with that morbid statement.
I had to crack myself.
That's a morbid statement, but it's interesting to see like how things, you know, like we talk about Pokemon, and like it's funny to think about like when we were 8, 9 years old, that was like cream of the crop, like still humongous, like kids. That's time I said yesterday, like, to buy Pokemon cards when you were 8 years old were always sold out, right? Never available.
No, it's true.
And so nowadays they're always available, and they're still
now
as
so
big
many.
As ever. Yeah, it's as many and still huge. Clearly still big. So it's like, wow, it's like I can still remember back, and it's, I don't know, it's still in your life. It's a weird thing. It's like kind of putting like I guess like milestones to certain parts of your life, and how those have grown and aged out.
Yeah, you kind of like go through life, and then one day you kind of realize, oh, now all this chunk of time has gone by. You know, and I think a decade is a good milestone. Like my band has almost been around for 10 years now. We're in our 10th year. So I think, I don't know why that's made me really think of it, because I think about, oh man, when I was 18.
Yeah, I remember when
19,
you started.
Yeah. And like, and you were the same thing. So it's like you can really quantify change that has happened in a decade. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can
definitely
see how much has changed, because a decade is like 5 years, maybe you're in the midst of the change. You don't realize it. But after another 5 years, you look back and a significant amount of time has passed. And you look back on those 10 years and like things are totally different. Like in that those 10 years, I've lived in two different apartments already.
Yeah.
You know, like I
didn't. And yeah.
You know?
Well, and another house in your parents' house and right, all this other stuff. So it's,
it's just crazy to think about. And I don't know, Tatiana Lee, thank you for making me feel old now. And I, you know, hey,
it's all her
do?
Fault, actually.
So yeah, so whatever. We're wrapping up now. Thanks, yeah, guys, for joining us.
Thank
these 2 hours.
Oh,
appreciate
let me, I got to do the little spiel at the end here. You know, if you guys like what you listen to on Radio Free Brooklyn, we do have a Patreon page available on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com, RFB.NYC as well, and / Patreon. You go there, drop a buck, drop $2, drop $20, whatever.
Can I ask a question, though, Steve?
Yes.
What do you get if you give something?
In
this world known as the USA, of the United States of
the world.
Of the world.
You know what you get?
What do you get? You got to get, you get, if I'm going to give you something,
$1,
I got to get something.
$1 is a thank you from your boys. I think $5 is a hat or a mug, and then you get a hoodie. There's a couple different options. You give us too much money, and we'll let you actually come on air, record a promo, show promo, promote your own business or whatever else you may have. So
sponsors.
Yeah.
Sponsoring.
Yeah, sponsoring things. And if, you know, all you got to do is go to the page, you know, drop a buck, keeps us going, keeps... Hopefully get the heat on in this place, because it's a little chilly. I'm a little brisk.
Yeah, nips, I see a nip. I see your nips.
Yeah. So, you know, please, we appreciate it as always. And if you like The Stroll Show, come see us at facebook.com/TheStrollShowBK. We got the next show coming in. We're playing out. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah,
and
stay tuned for pull requests.
Yo, Vinny.
Yeah, and Vinny, are you up, Vinny?
You up, kid?
Vinny.